This is Richard Jacobs from Speakeasy Marketing, and today I have a very, very special and interesting guest. His name is Brian Kurtz from Boardroom Inc. And I wanted Brian to come speak to you guys because Brian is a master of direct mail and direct response. I'm going to have him kind of give his own bio because he'll do it a lot better justice than I would. But I can tell you that as I get into direct mail for you guys and as I get into newsletters for you guys, the more I learn, the more I realize Brian is a definite resource to go to for decades of learning on how to do this right, how to get clients, and how to make money doing it. So with that being said, Brian, if you wouldn't mind, welcome, and please give a little introduction of what you do and some credentials.
Well, thanks, Richard. It's a real privilege to be with you. I can't say I am an attorney. I can say that I've spent a lot of money on attorneys, so that's a good thing, right? Running a business that has been anywhere when I got to the business at Boardroom, which is a newsletter and book publisher, back in 1981, it was probably about a $3 million business. We've been as much as a $150 million business. And we have, I always say we've crushed it in all media, meaning direct mail, online, direct response television. And if I had crushed it in all media, at the same time, all the time, I probably would be on an island in Tahiti with a lawyer who negotiated a fantastic contract for me. But that's not the case. I'm still a working stiff. I love what I do. Anybody who's ever seen my profile, and I'll give some information on me and my stuff later. I'm not selling anything. I'm just really sharing a lot of content over the years. But I basically helped for the last 32 years help Boardroom become kind of a leader in direct response marketing, direct mail for the most part, but we also, as I said, do a lot of stuff online, and we did a lot of stuff on direct response television. But I think it's funny, and I talk about that we've been as much as $150 million business. I've said to people that, and it's a real number, that we've mailed probably 1.3 billion pieces of direct mail over the last 20 years even. So it's even more than that over my 32 years. And of course, I didn't lick every stamp, as we all know. But I think that, and I've also been the world's best list manager, and I don't say that to brag. I say that because the first 10 years of my career, I spent in the list business, direct response list business, and I think that gave me incredible grounding in understanding audiences, how people, you know, human behavior, how people respond to offers, how people, what makes people tick. And it doesn't really matter whether attorneys are going after clients or boardrooms going after subscribers and book buyers, or, you know, my friends in the industry are going after whoever, whether it's, you know, people who want to learn how to play tennis on the internet or people who are carpet cleaners or whatever it is. So then I became really expert, not as a copywriter per se, but as a purveyor of great direct response copy. So I want to make sure we talk a lot today about the power of creative and copy and how that combined with mailing the right list and getting to that right list, we'll talk about that too, the building of your list, is really kind of the big keys to developing a direct response business. I sometimes often say when I ask what my bio is, it's like I usually start with that I'm also, not also, but I am the best little league umpire in baseball that anybody would ever meet. I'm very serious about my baseball umpiring. It's a completely different head and mindset than being in direct mail. But I always tell people when I leave my office on an afternoon in the spring to go do a varsity high school game, that the idea that I can make a mistake in direct mail and, you know, I don't have people yelling at me. I miss one pitch and I got people all over me. So the idea of focus and the concentration, we might want to talk about that at the end, just in terms of the lawyers I work with, and I work with a lot of them and I know a lot of lawyers, their intensity and their focus to have to read contracts, to be so enmeshed in the detail of their work. I hope that everybody on your list spends time doing something outside being a lawyer that helps them come back to that focus. So for me, it's umpiring. For some people, it's yoga. For some people, it's something else. And I always like to tell people about my umpiring because it you know, the days that I umpire a game, those nights, I'm more focused on my responses to emails and my ideas and my focus than I would be in any other days. And it's because calling 200 pitches and making sure you don't miss one is pretty good discipline. So I always like to talk about that. Nothing to do with direct marketing.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, it's important to have the work-life balance. And like you said, instead of taking away from your work, it adds to it. So that's a great message for everybody. No problem.
And then the last thing I'll say is that, you know, the $1.3 billion and the $150 million, they all sound like great numbers. But I really think my real superpower is, and I'm not bragging. I think there's a John Wayne quote, it's not bragging if you did it, right? And I'm not bragging because I'm generally known to be a pretty humble guy, and I love people and I love helping people. And so my superpower is contribution and connection. And so doing this call, you know, I think when we connected via email or LinkedIn or whatever, and I saw your background and you said, you know, would you hop on this call? You know, I'm not looking to sell anything, and I'm looking to contribute to another universe of people that could take my expertise and use it for something really good, especially if they can help people. And in the case of lawyers, you know, I've had a lot of lawyers bail me out of a lot of messes, whether it's, you know, in direct marketing and intellectual property stuff, whether it's on tax issues, everything. I mean, everything, claims, you know, on people, defamation claims. I've dealt with lawyers, and I have a different lawyer for every single niche that we work in, so.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I guess when I speak to someone that has so much experience that you do, or, you know, a lot of the attorneys I speak to, they have 20, 30 years, I tell them my big credential. I say, well, I've been alive for 38 years. Usually, that's pretty impressive. Not only that,
it's like, you know, it's the difference between 1 year's, 38 years experience versus 1 year's experience for 38 years. So there are some people that learn a job and they just keep doing the same thing over and over again. But I love that. You know, take it a step further, though. I've been on the planet 38 years. Now there's experience, and I've paid attention to what I'm doing, to everything around me. I've absorbed, I've learned, I've, you know, created an incredible tribe, as you have, and I say tribe in a very positive way, you know, that people that really want to hear what you have to say, and you help them and you coach them. To me, you know, 38 years, I mean, Marty Edelston, who was the founder of Boardroom, who just passed away in October, and one of my, you know, probably my number one mentor in business and probably one of the great direct response and direct marketing men of all time. You know, used to always say things like, you know, getting old isn't so bad. I got all this wisdom, you know, and I just got to now share it with as many people as possible. And I got to tell you, I'm the most grateful person on the earth to have Marty's wisdom in me for the rest of my life.
Excellent. Very good. All right, so, you know, to get into the meat of the interview. So, you know, having overseen the mailing of literally, you said billions with a B, right?
Yes, billions with a B.
Okay. Direct mail pieces. I mean, obviously you have a lot of insight into the minds of consumers. One thing I hear from my attorneys is, you know, I do criminal defense or DUI, so my types of people are different. You know, they immediately look to hire somebody. And, you know, a bankruptcy attorney will tell me, well, you know, my people, they take sometimes months to make a decision. They're not like criminal defense. So every attorney I run into seems to have, like, very staunch opinions on who their customers are and how they act. And, I mean, you tell me, have you seen that those kind of opinions are valid, or through all your work, is it kind of, you know, is it really the only experience will bear that out, or is this true with their thinking?
No, I don't. Any absolutes are never true. Usually, for the most part, absolutes are never true. And I think you had mentioned to me, you know, people saying direct mail is dead or something like that. And I got to tell you, while the internet is really cool, and I do think it's going to catch on at some point, as is email marketing. That was sarcasm, by the way. You know, one of the slides that I put up very early on in almost any presentation I do to people who want to learn more about direct mail is that nothing scales like direct mail. And what I mean by that is that if you do direct mail properly, meaning that you've done the right list selection, you have the right creative, you're hitting the right audience at the right time, there's no way that you're not going to get the highest response rates, the highest return on your advertising dollar. That doesn't mean it always works, and that doesn't mean that, you know, you don't spend, and it's very expensive. It's one of them, if not the most expensive media, it's certainly one of the most expensive. And nothing scales like it, meaning that, you know, we still do direct mail today that on a book, like we have a book that we sell on a trial basis. One is on diabetes. We do a lot of health information. And we can still get 4 and 5% response rates. You know, online, you'd be lucky to get 0.005, right, or 0005 or whatever. And so I think also I think that some of the negatives on direct mail are because it is so expensive, and if you're marketing lower priced products like broad products like we do, like subscriptions at $39, I can make the case that, you know, direct mail is getting tougher and tougher. Universes are smaller, you know, the lists you can get that are targeted are harder to get. But I'll make the case that for your guys, given that one client could be worth tens of thousands of dollars, if not more, and if you look at their lifetime value, which is another calculation that you must look at when doing something like direct mail, that the kind of quality person you're going to get who have spent time going through a direct mail piece and reading through it is going to be so much better than someone who responded to an email, because they're going to be much more invested in you, your product, your story, whatever it is, if it's powerful. And again, I think when you're in a service business, that you could have a client for 10 years at a retainer, or people who maybe it's DUI today, but maybe it's some other criminal something later on. You'd be crazy not to use the medium that could get you the best qualified people, and then get the best qualified people who'll stay with you the longest. I have two other quotes that I use in my presentations. One is, I say $1 per thousand marketing, cost per thousand marketing, deserves $500 per thousand thinking. Now, that might not be a term that every lawyer on this call knows, but dollar per thousand means what I spend for media. So if I spend, you know, $1 per thousand to send out a bunch of emails, I don't think about it that much because it's cheap. I can send it to a lot of people very quickly, and maybe I'll get lucky like a needle in a haystack and get a new client. Whereas in direct mail, which could cost anywhere from, you know, $200 to $500 per thousand with your printing and your postage and all of that, if you get the discipline that says, I'm spending that much on my marketing, it's going to be so good and so compelling that if you just took that discipline of that and put it into your email, can you imagine? And the best email marketers I know are the ones that think about the messaging in their emails at that very, very deep, visceral level. In fact, most of the best email marketers I know, for example, don't spend a lot of time with HTML emails and highly designed little mini websites, but they do text emails that are very personal. And that's what direct mail is all about. Direct mail, going from email to direct mail again, the personalization and the ability to talk to people on that level is just so, so powerful. So again, you know, we only have probably an hour together total, but okay. The intricacies of learning direct mail are some of the most important skills that anybody would learn. And I'll take it a step further again for lawyers who are going to say, well, you know, selling's evil, you know, it's too hypey, blah, blah, blah,
that's
blah.
That's what I was going to bring up, yeah. Now, I wanted to give you what's on their minds, but go ahead.
So that's something that we definitely should talk about. But selling is not evil, and I'll make the case that I don't care if you're a lawyer, a carpet cleaner, a marketer, a subscription marketer. If you have something that you believe in, and that you know, sometimes you're believing in just making money, and that's fine. But if you believe in that you're the best lawyer, for example, for defending people on a certain type of offense, whether it's DUI or something else, I'll put it in a very powerful way. I'm not chiding anybody, but I'm saying it's almost irresponsible of you as a person with a service or a product that you owe it to the world, so to speak, to get it out there. And you know what? people are not just going to land it. You'll get lucky with some referrals, and people are not just landing at your door magically. And to not sell is a crime. To think that selling is evil and that direct mail is more hypey than email, or that, you know, going on TV is worse than this. And I'll talk, if you want to talk later, about, you know, TV and ambulance chasers on TV. And I say ambulance chasers actually in a positive way, and that'll be a teaser for later, is why, right, why being labeled an ambulance chaser, meaning someone who's going to represent somebody who's had an auto accident or has been in an asbestos suit or something like that. I'm telling you that there's a way for you to be a total hero and not just be the guy on TV who's like being viewed as some smiling swindler of some sort.
Okay. Well, I can tell you my experience is that, you know, some of my attorneys, they say, direct mail is unethical, distasteful, or you only get, you know, people that have no money. Meanwhile, other people this very moment are doing direct mail. They're getting lots of clients. They love it. You know, so I see this duality in everyone I speak to.
So yeah, I love it. If we can have one message that we can take away from this interview, Richard, it's that, you know, anybody who's in your group, anybody who's in your coaching group, anybody who's on your list, anybody who's listening to this interview, stop discounting and stop making absolute statements about something being unethical or something not working or something. Everything can be done within the parameters of what you're comfortable with. There's direct mail that we do that no one would want to do. They think it pushes an envelope in the health area, for example. There are other people that do things that I would find distasteful, and there's direct mail that, as I said, I've done billions of pieces of direct mail. Is there direct mail out there that I, Brian Kurtz, would find totally distasteful, unethical? Absolutely. And in fact, I served 6 years on the Direct Marketing Association Ethics Committee, not as a lawyer, but as a practitioner, playing kind of judge and jury to people who I think were stepping over the line in terms of how they hid their offers or how they were not genuine in what they were doing in their sales messages. So anybody who makes an absolute statement that direct mail is unethical is I'll be bold here, and people might shut me off right now if they hear this, but you know, I think they're crazy to say that. You can't make that absolute statement.
Well, very good. Okay. Right. You know, a big reason I wanted to interview you, and now we'll get into the real nitty-gritty, is so some of the guys I work with, for instance, are in the DUI space, okay? Some are in bankruptcy, other areas. So in DUI, for instance, it's not a premeditated thing. It happens, and the person themselves doesn't even know it's going to happen. Clients come from all walks of life. I've asked hundreds of attorneys about this. They said young, old, lawyers, police, anything and everyone is, you know, gets this offense. So what makes it tough is, how do you target these kind of people unless you get, you know, their names and the fact that they're arrested? And even when you get a list of people that are guilty of this, or sorry, have been charged with this offense, how do you tease out the ones that are able to pay you or the ones that really would value having you as a lawyer instead of just a public defender? And how do you take that blob and make it into something leaner and meaner that will get you a better response?
Great question. So really great question. So I think about this kind of stuff a lot, even though I'm not in a service business, but I always do think about this concept, and it sounds like I'm making this up, but it's definitely something that I've followed my whole career, so maybe I should patent it or something. Although I'm sure you have any patent lawyers on your list. But the idea of two kinds of marketing for this discussion. One I'm going to call episodic marketing, and the other I'm going to call long-term customer value marketing. And we'll shortcut the second group, the long-term customer value marketing. I'm going to call that lawyer on a shelf, okay? So it's episodic, meaning something just happened. I need a lawyer. I need him now. Where, you know, got to get him. Then there's the law, and then versus lawyer on a shelf. So let's talk about episodic for a minute. So you had another question further down, which I'd like to bring up to this point because I think it fits. You said something like, what can attorneys do in a competitive mailing environment where sometimes 20 or 50 other attorneys are mailing to ensure their mail gets open, read, and responded to? So basically what you're saying is that we've got a commodity situation on the list. Because getting a list of episodic in an episodic situation is very difficult. For example, we have products in the health area that target people with diabetes. So in order to, you know, until they get diabetes, you'd say, well, how do I mail to them? If they don't have diabetes, what am I targeting? But you have to think about, in our case, that there's a bigger universe. There's diabetics, there's pre-diabetics, there's people with who have obviously friends and relatives who are diabetes. And I think you talked about, you know, people who have people that they could refer lawyers to. So on the one hand, if you can't get the list, if you can't get the list as soon as it comes out, trying to get someone to sign up for your services as a lawyer at the moment or shortly after the moment they are accused of a particular thing is going to be very difficult. However, it sounds like you can get lists, and in fact, I know you can because I did a quick consultation with a lawyer in Indiana, and I don't know what the laws are in every state on this, but in Indiana, apparently, 30 days after an accident, someone has an accident and they make an insurance claim, 30 days after, there's a public list that's made available, and that every lawyer, it's a feeding frenzy, and then every lawyer can grab that list and send mailings to it with all the bells and, you know, all the qualifiers, you know, that it's an advertisement and all that. And the thing that the consultation I did with them is I went through their creative package, because now you're in an episodic environment, everybody's mailing the same list. And we can talk about list segmentation later. Let's talk about that. So in that scenario, which sounds like a scenario that does come up a lot in the legal profession, what are you going to do to differentiate yourself from everybody else? Now, these are all, I used the term ambulance chaser before, these are all people that are going to go try to get people to use them as an attorney to stake their claim on either an insurance company or the other driver or whatever that is. And what I did was, and again, I think this is applicable to this and what your lawyers can do no matter what area they're in. The first thing I wanted to see is everybody else's creative. I wanted to see what, you know, what's the, when the feeding frenzy starts on that list, what's the average person who's claiming whiplash getting from 15 or 20 lawyers in Indiana? So I got a sense of that, and almost everyone was just very similar. It was, you know, basically you had an accident, hire me. Very, you know, close to it. And sometimes it had the picture of the guy or the woman on the outer envelope, like a color picture. And that reminded me of the TV ad. So it was like what I call, and usually they're smiling and it was everything got so commoditized. And so the first advice that I gave these folks is that the first thing you have to do is separate yourself. So on the creative side, put out a message that's all about value. How do you create value to somebody who's claiming whiplash, who's looking for a lawyer? Well, instead of going out there and saying, hire me, hire me, hire me, with, you know, all kinds of fire alarms, do a very subtle envelope. Maybe it's a 9x12 envelope, because that's what everybody was using, so it's a big envelope. But maybe there's only one line on the envelope that says something like, you know, the five things you need to know when you're being sued, or that you've been in a car accident and you've been wronged, or whatever it is. And then what you do is in the envelope, hopefully every attorney on this call could create valuable content that would be great for their audience. And so instead of going right for the kill and try to sell them on your services right away, why don't you romance them a little bit? And the beauty of that is twofold. One, if you get the episode, you know, they're gonna notice you different because you just gave them a free pamphlet or a free special report that's going to be valuable, usable, whatever. So all of a sudden you've established credibility. You've definitely differentiated yourself from what I saw in this environment anyway. I don't know what it's like in DUI or in other places. And then once you differentiated yourself, even if they already hired another attorney, don't you think that they're going to take that report and look at it since they just had the accident? And then in that report, you obviously want to have your toll-free number in there, any kind of direct response device in there, so that now you've gone from episodic to possibly being on their shelf for next time. So you serve both purposes. And again, that's only if you can get access to the list. Now, if you don't have, if you don't know how to get to the list, I think episodic marketing is kind of like a stab in the dark, and I don't know that direct mail is the best for that. But I will say that the lawyer on a shelf, the long-term marketing, should always be part of your marketing mix. That you want to be the lawyer, in this case, I'll use lawyers specifically because that's our audience today, that you want to be the lawyer that's supplying content, that's creating credibility, that's someone that people want to work with for the long haul, and you're basically planting a seed for the future. And that future is about getting, eventually you want to get their name onto a list, because the next time it won't be episodic. The episodic is going to be, they're going to come and find you. And the way you do that, and I'm sure you've instructed your folks, is to not only put that content into print if you're doing direct mail, but the same is true online. So if you have access to their email addresses and you can get their attention the same way, you know, download the attached report, and then in that report you actually say, and click here for another special report or another interview that I just did, if this lawyer is more of a public person, and then they go to your little squeeze, you set up a squeeze page, you have them, I'm sure that people on your list will know what that is. If they don't, it's basically a mini website with a piece of content where they have to give you their email address in exchange for giving them another piece of content. Now, you haven't sold them a thing yet, but now you're doing some list creation because you have to look ahead. Everything is not about eating what you kill as soon as you kill it. In fact, I'm not saying you even have to kill it. You put it in you're putting it in a cage, or you're putting it on you're putting it on a wildlife preserve, waiting, and they're grazing. They're grazing on your content. And then 2 months, 3 months from now they're on your list. Now you want to have to then create blogs, and I guess you want to talk about newsletters too. But now you're creating your own list of people that when the episodic happens next time, at least, you're going to be the guy that they're going to think of first, or the gal you're going to think of first, because you're the one that's established credibility and relationship with them. So that's the big difference between episodic and lawyer on the shelf, and I think you want to try to do both as often as possible, and you can do this in any media. You can in any medium. You can do it in direct mail, you can do it on TV, you can do it on email. Email's sweet, because if you can get people to click, it's one click to a squeeze page, to a download, to building a list. But it was a long answer to your question, but there's a I think that there's a lot of techniques, which I'm sure you teach a lot of too, that if they're not doing this, they're missing out on opportunities, and if they don't get the deal today, they'll get it tomorrow.
Well, here's the two segments. So when you talk about the lawyer on a shelf, a good way to get at that is an attorney's past clients, current, which are about to become past. So I encourage them not to stop communicating with their clients once they've done helping them. I think a lot of what you said is tied into that, because someone that has a DUI today, their Aunt Martha may unfortunately be involved in domestic violence 3 months from now, or their uncle gets divorced, or they have to file bankruptcy, or something happens to them down the line. In terms of the upfront, trying to get the initial client, we started talking about that, but if you don't mind, I want to go a little bit deeper into that, because it is available to get lists, for instance, for people recently arrested and what they are arrested for, like you said, 30 days after a car crash. In a lot of states, you can get the list of people that were in the car crash, bankruptcy, people that have judgments against them or foreclosure, they can get lists of those. But where a lot of the lawyers seem to fall down is that they'll throw their hands up and say, well, 30 other guys are mailing and, it's too competitive and I give up. Or, we tried direct mail and it didn't work. Or, as a lawyer, they're very concerned about being professional and having this image. And, again, direct mail, quote, unquote, doesn't work. And they don't know why. And they just kind of throw in the towel on it. So maybe you can talk about techniques and strategies on how to make direct mail work better in a scenario where you have a list. It is episodic, and you're trying to get clients up front right there.
Yeah, well, the first part of your – there were kind of two questions in there, I think. the first part about past clients, let me talk about that for a second, and then, because I think the advice you're giving them is spot on. There's a rule of thumb in direct marketing, and this is for anybody. I don't care if you're doing, you're a lawyer or you're selling subscriptions to a magazine. Your best list, this is a very important thing. I hope people write this down. Your best list is your ex-buyers list, meaning that in our case, we have a big newsletter called Bottom Line Personal. Bottom Line Personal mails, I don't know, we used to mail, you know, 4 or 5 million pieces a year. You know, now we're only mailing probably a couple of million a year. And by far, the best lists we mail are former subscribers who are expired, who stop getting the publication. And you say, well, wait a minute, they stopped getting it. They didn't like you anymore. Well, screw that. It's just the opposite. They had some reason, inertia, you know, time, money. They didn't get the renewal bill. They moved and didn't forward their address, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, you mail an expire list, you do address change on it, and it's by far the highest responding list. So if they like you once, the odds of them liking you again are pretty good. I mean, if you screwed them or you were a terrible lawyer, yeah, that's going to hurt you, obviously. But if your performance was good, your expire list is your best list. So you want to talk to that audience a lot differently, and I totally agree with you, to not be in constant correspondence with them or touch points with them is really a crime. And I'll tell you why. And when I say in touch with them, it's not sending an email every couple of months or every week or whatever saying, do you need my services? Do you need my services? It's actually being in touch with them with touch points that are either a blog about something that you read in the news that you knew might be interesting to them in the area that, I mean, I would actually segment my list by what thing I help them with. So I'd have all my, I mean, I don't know how specific you have to get, but I have my list segmented where I have the people who were DUI. Maybe I have the people who were car accident, boom, boom, you know, whatever the, or maybe it's just criminal versus civil. I don't know. But whatever the segmentation is, then send out a useful piece of content, either something you write as a lawyer or something you found in the trade press or something you found and said, you know, it's the tip of the week. It's the email burst. It could be a blog. It could end up turning into a newsletter. We could talk about that, and that's more extravagant. But to not have touch points that have nothing to do with selling them anything, once they've been a client of yours and they've spent money with you, is a crime. That's a crime. So you're giving up, you're basically leaving tons of money on the table. You won't see it right away. You're gonna start doing these blogs and you're gonna say, well, I'm not getting any more business from my former customer list. But you can see that once something becomes episodic, you might be the first person they'll call because you develop this relationship with them. Now let me take it one step further. That segmentation of your own list, of your previous customers, should be really segmented not only by maybe by subject area so you can send different people different types of content, but I also think it should be segmented by something like, maybe what they spent with you, like how big a case it was. So if someone who spent $10,000 with you versus someone who spent $1,500, I want those separated in some way, not because I'm going to go write them a letter and says thank you for spending $10,000, but and I'll give one quick example and it'll be very illustrative and I think it'll be powerful. I was with someone who got on a fairly large list. Again, I'm not saying you can have a 9 million. I have a 9 million name list offline. I'm talking about the segmentation you do with 9 million people. The same principles are true if you have 90 people or 900 people, and so. I know someone who had a list of maybe, I don't know, a few thousand people. And she was showing me how the people bought on this list. So it was like I have thousands of people who bought one product from me. I have this many hundred who bought two. I've got all the way down. And at the bottom it said I have one person who bought 17 products from me. Now that's equivalent in a legal world. So we'll say that's someone who spent $30,000 on two cases with me. I'm making it up. Get the gist, right? A high ticket spender on my list, right? So my line to her, which was sort of sarcastic, but she got what I meant, and I hope your guys will too, and I hope you do. It's that I said, oh, see this person here that bought 17 products from you? When's the last time that person came to your house for dinner? And she looked at me like funny, and I said, okay, I'm being a little facetious, but do you get where I'm going here? Do you get that the person who's bought 17 products from you should be treated differently than someone who got two? That doesn't mean you ignore the person from two, but that person gets different messaging. So the messaging to the 17 product person could be a personal phone call. You know, you're my favorite customer. Do you know you're my biggest customer? Do you know that I just love the fact that I was able to do all, and now let's put it in the lawyer's thing. Do you know, I call them up one day and I say, you know, I was looking at all my customers and I got to tell you, you're the customer that, you know, is probably the one who's brought me the most business. And I just want to thank you. And, you know, I just published such and such, and I just heard about such and such, or I'm going to send you a book that I just read that I think you'll like. The expense that you're going to spend on that customer can be so much more, because the lifetime value of a 17-person buyer or a $10,000 or $20,000 customer, you want to keep that relationship, and then it goes to everything you were saying about them then not only thinking of you for their next legal battle, but all their relatives and their legal battles. And all this stuff goes a long way. And you know what? That's direct mail. Because if you send a package, a lumpy package with a book, that you know that person who bought who spent the most money with you is a, I'll make it up, an Ayn Rand fan, you're going to send a copy, a limited edition copy of Atlas Shrugged to them. You think that goes a long way? I'll leave it there.
You know what the feeling? I have people that I've used for different things, and it's funny when they do a really good job and I like them. I actually feel a sense of pride where I want to refer them, and it makes me feel good to refer them because I feel like, oh, this guy is really good. You want to use him, and it makes me feel good to refer. It's weird.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Giving there's I got to get this thing written up because I refer to it often. But Dan Sullivan is one of the great. He has a company called Strategic Coach, and he is a coach for entrepreneurs. And a lot of people in his circle are lawyers and financial people. And Dan has this whole concept of the five ways you get paid. And actually, number five is what he calls reward, which is money. The other four, I can't think of them all off the top of my head because I'll be like Rick Perry at the debate, right? But I know one of them is referability. One of them is I'm going to get the list. And you know what? You send a follow-up, right, from these interviews?
Yeah.
So make a note. Let's make sure we tell everybody that we're going to send them the five ways you get paid, with number five being reward/money.
And, got it.
And it's what you just said. So that was actually your first question about your – you talked about your customer list, your people – you know, I call it my expire list, whatever it is. If you're not treating that list the way I just talked about in terms of both how you talk to them, how you segment them, you're really leaving tons of money on the table on a long-term basis. Maybe not short-term, day-to-day, but in the long-term, creating a list of people that will swear by you, that's as good. Referability is one of the biggest things about how you get paid, right?
Yeah, one quick question about frequency. A thing I hear from a lot of attorneys as well, send them a Christmas card, or can't we do this once every 6 months? Like, why is that not enough?
Oh, God. Well, for two things. One is I have a slide in one of my presentations that says give Christmas cards in July and relax during Christmas. And what that means is it doesn't mean you shouldn't send Christmas cards. What it means is that relationship building is an all year round endeavor in any business, whether you're in a service business or not, and especially if you're in a service business like being a lawyer. And yes, you know, I get inundated. I mean, I got piles of Christmas cards. Do you know how meaningless those are in the scheme of things? They're nice. You know, I'm not being a bah humbug here. But you know what? I don't send holiday cards. But you know what? I'm in touch with people on my list all year round, sending them books, articles, ideas, all sorts of stuff. Whenever I think of it, that is so much more powerful. And as far as frequency goes, once every 6 months, forget about it. That's out of sight, out of mind. I'm thinking, you know, if I was in a service business, and you know what? someday I might be. Someday I might have a consulting business, for example. My goal would be to blog once a week to an audience that I know wants to open what I've got. I'm not going to sell them anything once a week. I might sell them something once every 3 or 4 months if I have a new product or I want to endorse somebody's product. I mean, they might be advertising at some point for a product or service, but it's not about episodic. See, lawyers, what are you going to do? It's like, oh, if you need my services, please call. Well, you know what? Just because you sent an email to them doesn't mean you just became episodic, right? It's still a long-term play. So you want to be in the long-term play all the time. And so I would probably say if you're sending out content or something of value, once a week is not too often. Anything more than once a month. In other words, if you're not at least corresponding with them once a month, then your list is going to go dry. I mean, I don't want to make an absolute on that, but you got to be in regular con. You got to be in their face. And I'd say I make even a better, bigger case because of the way your questions have been moving, and I like your questioning about how do you deal with episodic. You can't deal with episodic. You're not going to ever be in the right place at the right time if you're not always in their face with really good content. I think there's a new book out. I have to read it, but I know the concept of it. It's by a guy named Gary Vaynerchuk, and I think it's called Jab, 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 Left Hook. And I just got an interview with Gary that I'm going to listen to. But the concept, I think, of jab, 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 left hook is that, you know, it's not, you know, online marketing gives you the opportunity, this is more email than direct mail, but online marketing gives you the opportunity to just deliver so much stuff to people at a very, very low cost. And you don't, and the left hook, which would be, in this case, the sale, doesn't have to come at all even. Sometimes the jab, jab, jab is going to create the left hook. The left hook meaning, please, 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 what can I buy from you? So I just want to, you know, I can't emphasize this enough. So anybody who says that, you know, I don't want to inundate people, whatever. You know what? If you send them crap and you send them sales solicitations every week, yeah, don't bother. That's cluttering their inbox, and you're going to be out of sight, out of mind, because they're going to stop opening. But the goal would be something, be in their inbox once a week and get them to open it once a week.
Well, I can tell you my experience. I send a, just like this, an email newsletter once a week. And in any given month, I'll get a few people that say, you know, go to hell, you're the devil. I'll get a few people that email me or call me and say, I really like your emails. You know, what can you do for me? And I'll get a lot of people that just read them and say, I really like your stuff. And it's every month it's like that. So I get the good, the bad, and the ugly, but I get the good, and it gets me business. And I rarely try to sell things. And when I do, people are happy to do it, but it works. And I'm doing this, and it's living proof it does work. And,
what,
you know, you think,
I have a question for you. What would be the reasoning for someone to tell you to go to hell? Is it because you're cluttering their inbox with anything? Because if you're giving them valuable content, and they're in your potential, because you're not going to mail to them if they're not in your core market or potential market, why would they tell you to go to hell?
Some people just do. It's, you know, like, no matter what, it just happens. There's a few that are like, you know, take me off your list. You're horrible. How dare you? You're a scammer or a spammer. It's just, you know, at first it upset me when it happened. It doesn't happen a lot, but maybe one person a month or every few months, someone will say something like that. They get, like, outraged. And I think they're just reacting to being marketed to by a lot of people, and they're upset that day, you know.
Well,
I don't take it as anything personal.
Yeah, no, you shouldn't take it personal, but and those people have opted in?
Yeah. And, you know, we email them back and say, no problem, we'll opt you out, and,
That's the easy part. Yeah, you definitely take them off. But I guess my point would be that, let's go back to the whole thing about building the list and squeeze pages and all that. If you built the list well, and again, I'm not saying that you didn't, because I'm sure you did. I know that you're a good marketer. That you don't want people on your list like that anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
And the fact is that if you got them onto the list for all the right reasons by giving them something of value to give you their email address, now you've got, like, a trust, right? They've trusted you. So And again, I guess what the good news is the market's always going to tell you. So the crowd's going to tell you if you have sent them something that goes over the line. So for example, I'll use a terrible example. So let's say one day you have a friend who has a new I'm trying to think of something in the legal profession that could be a product. So a friend who's got a I'm not going to think of an example, but let's say you're going to a list of judges and you just found a new gavel. I'm making this really preposterous, but you found somebody who's got a new gavel. I want to keep it sort of legal. And so you then do an email that's a promotion for the new gavel. You know, and you're always running the risk of people saying, you know, now you're selling me. And the first time you sell them something, they're going to opt out at some number. And you know what? At some point, depending on what your goal is, if it's to sell product, then you don't want them on your list. But let's go back to why we're talking about this topic together. We're saying lawyers are trying to get clients, and then keep clients for a long time. To that end, there'd be very little reason to do much selling in these monthly or weekly tips or e-newsletters. So if they opt out based on that, you don't want them on your list anyway, because now you're looking for lifetime value clients. You're looking for clients who are not only going to come back to you one more time, but clients who are going to keep coming back time and again whenever they need a lawyer. And to do that, they have to be wedded to you and how you write your content and how you communicate. Why do I want somebody who's a client who's going to make me nauseous, right?
Right. Well, what I wanted to say is that I'm doing this, and you may get a little bit of negativity, even if you're doing it right, I feel like. You may get a little bit of negativity. Don't let it stop you. Don't let it make you feel like, oh, now I am bothering these people. I was right. You know, it's because they get a lot of positive response, and that more than offsets the few people that are upset. So it doesn't bother me. That's why I wanted to bring this up.
Yeah, no, very well put. Well put. So let me, and then your second part of your question was, you know, when everybody's getting the same list, they throw their arms up and they say it's too competitive. And, you know, then those people are probably, unless they're open-minded to thinking, well, I'm going to be the one that's going to beat everybody else. I wouldn't want a client if I was consulting with them on their creative, and I don't want that kind of client, because that's a defeatist attitude. Here's the deal. The deal is that the way this industry works is that everybody gets access to the same list at the same time. So those are the best prospects. So that's the fact pattern that we're dealing with. So
what are some tips that, you know, maybe this goes beyond strategy to just tactics. Are there any tactics or strategies people can use, the lawyers can use, when they have, let's say, like you said, a list of people just arrested, and them and 20 other guys are mailing them? What can they do to get their stuff opened, their stuff read, and better response?
Okay, so you've got to get your hands on every other piece that's out there. So I don't know how you do that. In my world, I can decoy myself on everybody else's, you know, mailing list.
Tell you how they can do it. You know, when they have clients that come in, I tell them, ask every single client, did you get any mail, and bring it all in, and we'll do something for you, you know, as a thank you for doing that.
Perfect. So basically, the first technique I would give them is you have to create what we call a swipe file, SWIPE. That's what we call it in the direct mail world, and you can do it in email too. And what a swipe file is, you see what everybody else is doing. And if you see it go out time and again, chances are it's working. Now, in this particular case, I can make the case that there are a lot of lawyers who are not marketers who are sending out the same mailing pieces over and over again, or the same email over and over again, and it really isn't working, but they're doing it anyway because it's all they know. But you still want to see what the competition looks like, because that's step one. Step two is then you have to sit down, and you probably, if you're not a great writer yourself, this is where you might want to spend a little money on either a consultant. You know, someday I'll be one of those consultants, but right now I do have a full-time job. But, you know, I've done a little bit on the side. But I think you need a consultant or a copywriter, someone that you trust that could write theoretically in your voice, that you want to then brainstorm looking at all of, you know, I can even see the meeting taking that swipe file, putting everything on the floor, on bulletin boards, all over a conference room somewhere, and start looking around and saying, what can we do to say if our piece landed in the same mailbox as this stuff, what could we do to differentiate? And the same with email. What could we do with our subject line that would differentiate us? And so, you know, with email, you got to be careful, because if you use the word free, you could get blocked and all that. But the idea here is that the general, then that, so that's two. So one is a swipe file. Two is having the faith in maybe hiring a consultant and or copywriter or both to help you in the brainstorming of how you're going to differentiate with all the noise out there for the same list. And then I guess the third piece would be you've got to start going out and testing some stuff. And I think it's almost universal that you want to think about, like what I said earlier, think about delivering something of value instead of delivering just what I would consider a sales piece. The difference between giving somebody a free special report and then mention that they can hire you versus talking about just how they're going to hire you and why you're the best, those are two different things. Now, you can put a little bit of the sales message within, but you cannot be void, in my opinion, if you want to really differentiate. Because what I saw in the small sampling that I've seen is that most of the stuff that I saw from lawyers going out to the list that everybody gets, most of them are – they're all doing basically the same thing. So you have to think first, how am I going to be different? And I'd say in most cases, being different is going to be creating a whole different level of value and being a little more patient, no matter how episodic this is. Remember I said episodic versus on the shelf. So maybe you'll miss that first sale, but then if you can get them to opt in and you get them on your list, the next time the episodic comes up, you'll be the first one they'll think about, and then you don't have to get through the clutter again. But the only way to get through the clutter is by delivering value.
How about this thought? You know, I'm sure attorneys may think, well, if I tell them what to do or what they should look for, they're going to just take that information and then go hire someone else or find the cheapest guy. Do you think that'll happen, or do you think that it'll actually work to give them value? Trick question.
Yeah, you never wanna negotiate on price. Price is a commodity business, and skill expertise is a specialty business. And I would much rather talk about people that you've helped. I mean, anybody you've helped, if they're willing to give you testimonials. That's powerful, you know, in the diet world, you know, before and after pictures. So in this case, the before and after is, the before is, you know, accused of drunk driving. The after is, I don't know if you can do this. I'm sure there are legal restrictions on what you can say and what you can't say, but being able to get people to speak up for you who you've actually represented, that's not about price. That's about results. That's powerful copy. That's like good copy, right? And I don't know what the legal restrictions are. I mean, I'm looking at a package right now, right in front of me, for a new health offer, and the cover, it's like a 24 page direct mail promotion, 24 page. We call it Magalog. It looks like a little mini magazine, and the front page is basically a before and after testimonial about someone who went on this plan. It's not a diet plan. It's a nutritional plan, and I'd rather start with a story than start with just making claims and tell you how cheap it is or tell you that it's a good deal. So, yeah, negotiating on price, it's funny. Anytime I remember one of the criteria we had when we were on TV, we would sell products on TV and then people would call in and then you'd sell them other products, you know, other books and stuff when they called in. We were selling a health book. And I remember thinking about that I could make a lot of money if on the back end when they called in I could sell things like Sprint long distance service. I mean, what Sprint or AT&T or Verizon would pay you for a new starter on a cell phone account is huge, because they have a lifetime value of hundreds of dollars. And so, but I would never want to do that, because to me that's a commodity. And why would I think Verizon. I mean, some people say some people swear by Verizon over the other two. Well, you know what? They're all the same. That's a commodity. And now, you know, I don't want to sell commodity. So that's my own personal thing. But I think if you're selling on price, you're leaning towards selling on commodity. And I don't think you want to do that. And if you're a lawyer and a specialist in a particular area and you've had a great track record and do great work, wow, just the opposite. I wouldn't want to go near it. I wouldn't want to go near price. And say, in fact, I would go the other way and say, you know, price, you get what you pay for.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask, because some of the direct mail I've seen is price-focused, you know, DUI only, you know, $14.99, or, you know, bankruptcy only $9.99. You know, some of them are going to price, trying to go low and thinking that'll get them clients, but it seems like it backfires.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'll bet that there are success stories with those, you know, that people can accumulate a lot of new people very quickly. You know, they're, you know what I mean? There's probably a way to get a lot of business very quickly, but is that the business you want for the long haul? And chances are, if you've sold on price, that those aren't going to be long-term clients anyway. And so I think it's short-sighted for the most part. That doesn't mean it doesn't work, and it doesn't mean that you can't get new business that way. I would never say that. And again, I don't make absolute statements, as you can tell.
Yeah.
I'm sure that there are a lot of people on this call that probably think that I don't know what I'm talking about, because they've done exactly what you said, and even, you know, even the, you know, no cost obligation consultation, contingency only, you'll never pay a dime unless we set blah 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 blah. That could work. That could work in certain markets, I'm sure.
Right.
But me, I'm in business for the long haul in whatever I do and whatever I consult to. So I'd much rather have somebody who is sold on the fact that I'm the best lawyer you're gonna find in this area. And, you know, I will make sure that I will, you know, it'll be at a fair price with the best work, and my goal is to get you off, or to whatever the promise is. Cause
right. Okay.
That doesn't mean you should sell the price.
Okay. Yeah, we're coming to a close and running out of time. So I wanted to ask you, it might be unusual, but is there any room in this world for like a data append service? You know, let's say, you know, I'm an attorney. I do bankruptcy, and I have a list of, you know, 300 people I've helped in the past 2 years. And okay, great. I'm going to send them a newsletter and communicate with them. But is there a way I can find out more about these people, like look for commonalities, and then turn that back around and make what I'm doing a lot more effective, to either find more people like them or to communicate with them better to get them to refer more?
Good question. The answer is possibly. I think, though, that in the world of database marketing, the most important piece of data on any customer is what we would call transaction data. So transaction data for us is, did they buy 2 books, 3 books, or 4 books? Did they buy 2 books and then respond to one of our e-newsletters? So the amount of action and the amount of transactions that they've done with us is really important. So I would say more powerful data would be if you start, and there are definitely software programs that can track all this for you, but if you create an e-newsletter business or a business where you're able to constantly connect with your base and your quote-unquote client file or expire file, I think that keeping track of what they respond to, what they click on, what articles they're most interested in, that kind of data is going to tell you more about building that database. Now, there's certainly overlay data that you could do in terms of things like, you know, age, income, gender, but gender you know already. You can get some of that. I don't know how useful it is. Now, as far as psychographic data, that's also available. It's expensive, you know, and it's all implied data. So it's not necessarily – it might be that someone in that zip code or someone in that on their block, a lot of people check off an interest in golf on a warranty card, and you might get an overlay of a golf interest on a person or something like that. So there's a lot of these data append services like that. I don't know what's useful. So knowing somebody who's a golf fanatic, I mean, if you're thinking about doing what I said before about the person who spent, you know, $50,000 with you buying them a new set of golf clubs, could work. You know, that's something that would get on, right? That's something pretty powerful. I'm not recommending that, and I don't think that's the way to go because then it feels like a bribe almost. I would much rather, though, continually want to tick your file. You want to, what they call tick your file. You want to continually put data onto the names you already have based on their interest area.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know if there was anything there, but that's why I wanted
to
ask.
There are services, and again, if I was, you know, I think you want to hire a consultant to, I mean, I know what companies do that, so, you know, my thing would be I go out and find out what's available, how would we use the data. I think what's really important is not just finding out what data is available, but then if you got that data, what would you do with it? I mean, if you're not going to go create messages that pertain to that data, why bother? I mean, I don't think it's going to make people buy more legal services. What's going to lead them to being a better client or a longer-term client?
Okay. All right. Gotcha. Yes, the last thing I want to ask you is, do you have any story or a case study or anything that you can, you know, briefly tell us that would be illustrative for attorneys to show them the power of direct mail or follow-up done right?
God, I probably have, you know, I want to say hundreds, but, you know, I guess, let me give you this quick example. So we had a book, The Treasury of Health Secrets, and it was a great encyclopedia of health. It had great doctors in it. It was great material. We had a big direct mail package for it, and it did well for a while, and then it fell off. And we didn't know what to do in terms of new creative for it, so we kind of kept it on the shelf for a year or so. And then we decided to get into direct response television. So we go on direct response television with that same book, and now we put all these doctors that are in the book, we put them on screen, we film them, their tips are in the book. It was a real credible kind of great infomercial. And we launched a huge business on TV. And then what we did was we took all the elements from the TV and we worked that into a new direct mail package. And the only reason I bring this story up is that what was missing, I think, in the old direct mail package was it fell off. We didn't know what hook to use to get it, to bring it back. And the biggest hook we could use was credibility and people feeling comfortable with something that they didn't know our brand per se. I mean, Bottom Line Books is not that well known, neither is The Treasury of Health Secrets. But we had credibility with all these doctors from the best institutions. And by putting them all over the direct mail piece, we revived something that was considered dead. So I guess trying to put it into like a smaller context, because that was a big business. And this is, you know, this ended up being the equivalent of a $300 million business for us between the TV and the direct mail, and then we went online with it. But I think the key is that once you have a great story to tell, you can tell it in different ways and then move between different media. So think being not thinking in terms of any one medium. You know, think about your business, lawyer, subscription, I don't care what it is. Think about your business as being able to be promoted online and offline. And so how am I going to mix, get the best? And if something works in one or the other, bring it to the other. So I think that, and then I will give another quickie just to go back to the whole point about making sure you market well to your existing customers or what we call our expire list or previous buyers or previous clients. You may not need the same level of selling to those people, especially if you've come through for them. So let's use an example that if I already know that I helped you on a case that got you off a DUI charge, that when I prospect you for you know, will you refer me to one of your relatives if I want to do a promotion like that, I don't need to send you a 12-page letter. I need to remind you of what you did for me. Now, if you're someone who I really got off on a big charge, I might want to do that on outbound telemarketing, so the message is still the same. You know, it's very personal. It speaks exactly to what I did with you, so you have that information. And to be as powerful as possible, you may not have to tell the long story about who you are and where you came from and what law school you went to, but you certainly want to be able to sell the track record and the success and the experience. So all of that is applicable to subscription marketing and book marketing, as it is, I think, to marketing services like legal services.
Okay. Well, very good. I know you have to go, so you know, let's finish up. And I just want to tell you, I really appreciate you coming on the call. And are there any resources that you want to point out to attorneys listening where they can get more info on you or learn about the, you know, more about the world of direct mail and direct response?
Well, I think what I'm going to do, I think we decided, if it's okay with you, that I'll put up a squeeze specifically from this interview, which will be, I'm going to use my basic squeeze with a slash. So it'll be www.briankurtz.me, briankurtz.me/attorney. So it's www.briankurtz.me/attorney. And you'll be able to actually send that out, I think, also when you send this interview.
Okay. And Kurtz is Q-U-R-T-Z, right?
K-U-R-T-Z. It's www.briankurtz.me/attorney. And what we'll
Good.
Do, if okay with you, Richard, what we'll do is you and I will look at a lot of my content that I've done on other interviews and stuff. I think what I want to do is make the squeeze something about the list business. I did an interview with a great marketer named Joe Polish, and I think the one I'm leaning towards is, you know, list mastery. Because I think if your folks started to understand lists a lot more, I think that would be a really good thing. So.
Great.
So that, I think, will be really helpful to your guys, and they can opt in, and then they could be on my list, and they'll end up getting marketing information from me and all that. And then the other thing I'll say, and I'll give an email address out that I don't check all the time, and I'll try to respond to as much or as many as I can. But this is more if there's anyone on your list that is interested in possibly, you know, and this would be for paid consulting only, because I have a full-time job, so it'd be very difficult for me to do a lot of free consulting here, but
right.
I'm not looking for clients either. But if they go to an email, it'll be T-Rex, T-R-E-X, like the dinosaur, cowboy, C-O-W-B-O-Y, and the number 1 at gmail.com. And so T-Rex cowboy at gmail.com, T-Rex cowboy number 1, T-Rex cowboy 1 at gmail.com. And if they want to communicate with me, I will try to get to every email. I can't guarantee you. I know you have a big list, and it's not an email I check every day either. So.
Okay. Well, all right. Again, I really appreciate you coming on the call. Let me get the recording stopped.